Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Danny Kelly. Welcome to the new Trans Europe Express podcast. Myself and Rob Daly for the next couple of hours. Amazing goings on in Italy as Juve creep towards the next title in their fantastic history. We'll also talk about the equally storied Andreas Iniesta as he goes into retirement, clinching another title in Spain. We will try and unravel for you exactly what's going on in the title race in Turkey. And I don't just mean on the pitch there. We'll hear about a man with staples in his head affecting what's going on there and in their cup final as well. And we'll be joined by Tony Evans, Liverpool supporter and author, to talk about the history of this Champions League rivalry between Roma and Liverpool and the dark side of it as well. All of that plus the usual jokes and polls and all the rest of it over the next 2 hours. I hope you enjoy it. If you enjoy it half as much as we enjoy doing it, then you'll have a ball.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Danny Kelly's Trans Europe Express on Talk Sport.
Yeah, good evening and welcome to the Trans Europe Express here tonight on Talk Sport. I'm Danny Kelly. Alongside me, the others, they like to make out they're my favourite wingman on a Sunday night here. It's Rob Daly. Hello, Rob.
I know you're lying. I know, Danny. I listen to the podcast. I know you say it.
Did you make it to the curry night we had? Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yes. Well, then you'll have heard me describe to everyone how you're my favourite. Absolutely. After 11 pints, you were definitely my favourite. Yes, we're going to review all this weekend's action, including the extraordinary goings-on in Turkey. We've got some European musical homework for you following that Andreas Iniesta press conference. Simon Caller will go to the latest of his World Cup venue city. He's going to talk about Volgograd. Yes, Volgograd. We'll keep you up to tonight's big games. PSG against Gingamp. Deportivo La Coruña against Barcelona. Barcelona already won up there. And Torino against Lazio. And we've got a poll for you as well. We'll talk about that in a second. It should be a great 2 hours. And I'm going to talk even faster than this in order to squeeze it all in. Welcome to Rob Daly, my favourite co-presenter. To you, the listeners, my favourite listeners. And to Trans Europe Express on Talk Sport. You should have more confidence in your standing, that's all I'm saying. As I say, we normally go through the top four leagues in Europe in great detail, you know, outside of the Premier League. But we've had to drop one this week because of what's going on in Turkey. But we won't start there. Let's start in Italy and the headline, which again, I don't expect that the awards will be flying in, but there it is. We've got to write something. Juve got to be joking. And this is to reflect the fact that Juventus have taken not one, but given today's events of the last 2 hours, two gigantic strides to retain their title. But the game against Inter in the Derby Italia, as I must learn to call it, just extraordinary from start to finish.
Yeah, an incredible game in which Juventus took the lead. Inter went down to 10 men. A yellow card initially given against Vecinio for what looked like a sort of stamp on Mandzukic, overturned with VAR, so Inter down to 10 men. They then take the lead with two goals, Barzagli scoring an own goal, Icardi actually leaving the game at 1-1. So they lead 2-1 into the 87th minute, own goal by Inter Milan, screen out into his own net, Higuain header in the 89th minute, they win it, and it's typical, typical Juve.
I mean, even the sending off was weird, wasn't it? Because it was initially given as a penalty, so it couldn't be the triple whammy.
That's in the other. That's oh,
sorry,
in,
sorry,
that's
other
elsewhere.
Game.
We'll get into that.
Quite,
yeah, but quite right. But this was a yellow initially that the VAR team looked at and said, that's a red card. He stamped on him. And, right. And Mario Mandzukic had this huge cut in his leg.
One of my pet hates about modern football. I mean, I'm sure the blades are great for the movement, better perhaps for people's knees than studs were. But when you see the occasionally, it's only one a season, you see where somebody gets sliced open by one of the blades, and that's what's happened to Mario Mandzukic.
It must catch them absolutely perfectly or something.
Absolutely,
if
it breaks the skin at the start of the contact, I think that's when you get this kind of... It's disgusting. It's a butchery effect, isn't it? I mean, he was slit open the fella.
Yeah, it's a pretty ghastly picture as well that was doing the rounds online. And, you know, this talk of him being out potentially for the rest of Juve's season. They do have an upcoming Coppa Italia final against AC Milan. But it was such a huge result for Juve. Having lost to, obviously, you guys went on air last week, the loss to Napoli at home, which blew the title race wide open. We went into this weekend with Juve 1 point above Napoli with a tougher run in. So that win for Juve put them 4 points clear prior to Napoli at Fiorentina this afternoon.
And what we saw there was, well, a calamity for Naples have been so consistent, so dogged, so everything you need, and it's all blown up in their face this evening.
It has, because they've lost 3-0 to Fiorentina, and it started in the fifth minute when Koulibaly, who got the winner against Juventus the weekend before, brought down a player through on goal. Now, the referee originally gave a penalty, and in that circumstance, if the player's making a legitimate claim to win the ball, you can't send them off.
You give the penalty, but you can only give a yellow card because it's a so-called double jeopardy, triple jeopardy, is what they used to call it. Yeah.
VAR reviewed it and said, that's not a penalty, that's outside the box.
So now he has the option, indeed, the
correct
duty
decision
to pull a red card
to
out.
Send him off. So Koulibaly, key central defender, sent off. They don't score from the free kick. But then Fiorentina run away with it. And, you know, I saw most of the game. They looked pretty comfortable. Napoli just could not settle after that. What happened with Juve, I'm sure, rattled them the day before. And the hero for Fiorentina was Giovanni Simeone, son of Diego Simeone, who scored a hat-trick, one in the first half, two in the second half. Really good finishes. And with 4 points now, with three games to go behind Juve, that might have killed Napoli's relatively slim hopes now.
Yeah, and I guess some of the stats are starting to judge the brilliant effort Naples have made, but Mertens, after what he did last year in particular, no goals in seven, Insigne, two in eight. So they've done everything they can, but they've just run out of whatever attacking power you need.
And it's completely understandable because there was a situation whereby he wasn't rotating the team. They were competing in the Europa League, of which they were surprisingly knocked out by Leipzig. It always felt like it might be a little bit too much for them. And look, you can't criticise Napoli even from what's happened today, because they don't have the money of AC Milan. They don't have the wage bill of Inter. They don't have the money of, you know, even Roma. And somehow they've kept pace just in an extraordinary season. They've lost three games now all season. But sadly for them, probably it isn't going to be enough. Still tough games to come for Juve. They have to go to Roma, but they play Bologna at home mid-table. They play LS Verona, who are probably going to be relegated by then, the final day of the season. It looks like Juve are going to win it once again.
And in that case, I say, you know, fair play. They've put the points together, but you have to give credit still to Napoli, because at least they've made a race.
Oh, 100%.
Previous years, we've just watched you. I mean, Juve got into an early lead and essentially just kept everybody else at arm's length, haven't they? Picking and choosing their sides, depending on what their European commitments were. At least Naples are forced them to play and play their proper teams.
Exactly. And I mean, look, it's incredible that they've managed to keep pace this long. They have no right to be, you know, 27 points above AC Milan in the table. Just a quick one as well. Just been told there's a penalty for Lazio. I think it might be Luis Alberto. They're playing at Torino tonight in the race for the Champions League. And he's just having to take his time because the player's moving in on the edge of the
penalty. Savage was brought down for the penalty. A little bit of messing around, as is always the way.
I'm not too much of a big fan of the blonde highlights from Luis
Alberto.
Former
Liverpool player, of course.
Yes, indeed. And he steps up.
And he was never scoring that. Too much messing about before the start.
Was a little bit saved by the goalkeeper. So 22 minutes in, Torino 0, Lazio 0. Lazio looking to help cement their place inside the top four with a win tonight.
Does Immobile normally take the penalties for Lazio?
Yeah, I don't know why Luis Alberto's taking that.
Maybe he's not on the pitch. We'll check that for you. Yep. But that standing near the ball, two steps run up, not for me. no, it just isn't. We mentioned Roma. Now, look, later on in the show, people, join us. Obviously, you're with us now. At 9 o'clock, Tony Evans, who's written so brilliantly over the years about Liverpool Football Club, is joining us to talk about the long-running rivalry between Roma and Liverpool, and indeed between the fans of Roma and Liverpool, some of which we saw in unfortunate circumstances on Merseyside the other day, and hopefully we'll be avoiding and when the game is played, the second leg is played in Rome during this week. Both the Champions League semi-finals, by the way, are live here on Talk Sport. But Tony will be joining us from 9 o'clock to talk for about half an hour about everything that's been going on between those two clubs over the years. Immobile's gone off injured. That's why Luis Alberto was taking that sort of what you might call a cousin of a penalty. let's talk about the aforementioned Rome. We'll talk about them a lot later on. But yep. They had a good win, but they looked like they were playing a very attacking 11, possibly trying to work out what to do against Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll go into this a bit as well with Tony, yeah. But the three at the back, the high line, all of that just was a complete catastrophe from Eusebio Di Francesco. And I
couldn't have told them about the whole team doing that, but I could have told them what would happen if Fazio was allowed to do that.
Juan Jesus, who was absolutely terrified of Mo Salah in the second half, he was absolutely terrible. Sure enough, he got himself sent off this weekend as well in the league, as Roma beat Chievo by 4-1. But they went 4-3-3. Now, they did rest a couple of players. Manolas on the bench, he came on. They didn't play Florenzi. But I wonder if actually the team he's selected in terms of an attacking sense with El Shaarawy, Schick and Dzeko might be what he goes with. He was very unhappy with Cenk Azunder, who was getting grief from his own teammates before he was hauled off at half-time. The other issue is that Diego Perotti, who came on and was a massive factor in Roma getting back into the game.
I thought so.
Superb. Might miss the second leg of the Liverpool tie because of a shoulder problem. Kevin Strootman is also a doubt for the game. Both of them miss this weekend's game with Chievo, and that's a big blow for Roma in what is already a slim chance of reaching the final.
That's fair to say, though. A little bit less sort of slim than it was 10 minutes before the end of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I shall be looking at your face, because I think it's a big secret you're a Liverpool fan, and Tony's when we discussed that last 10 minutes. I mean, overall, Liverpool were just magnificent. I mean, I was breathtaking at times. And then that happens, and you can't help thinking, oh, blimey.
I know, I'll keep my powder dry on what that was like for
okay,
later
we'll do that, absolutely right. Now, the reason why we're making such a big fuss about Lazio's penalty is, of course, this game is critically important at the top of the table. Lazio currently fourth. They need to win that, because if they do, they'll put Inter Milan in behind the eight ball almost for qualifying for the Champions League.
Completely, with three games to go. If Lazio win tonight, they would be 4 points off the Champions League places, and it only compounds the fact that, you know, Juve and Inter hate each other. It just goes way back to loads of match-fixing allegations and refereeing and controversial games back in the 90s and everything. Not only have Juve beaten them at home with 2 goals in the last minute, they might have knocked them out of the race for the Champions League. So, massive blow for Inter, who have been completely, I don't want to say up and down, they were up for a long time and then down for a very long time. And it would be an extraordinary achievement for Lazio to get themselves back into the Champions League.
At the bottom, Benevento, of course, have long gone. Verona will go. And then it is Perm any one from Chievo, Spal, counting upwards, Cagliari, Crotone and Udinese. Very close. 3 points covering those six clubs.
Big win for Spal at Hellas Verona to just keep themselves in 17th, just outside the relegation places. You know, you'd probably argue that Udinese up to 14th, is that what we're saying?
Are still
with a chance of being relegated. They've got slightly better goal difference than the rest around them.
They've lost 21 matches this season.
It's absolutely staggering. It's one of the most in the league. Crotone, Cagliari, you know, Sassuolo probably have done just about enough to get drawn back into it, but very tight down at the bottom. Not sure who's going down. Empoli did get promoted from Serie B on Friday.
We've enjoyed so much looking at how close Serie B has been this season. And that's one. So now we know at least one name. I mean, it wouldn't be wrong to call Empoli a yo-yo club, but they're the first one promoted back up Serie A.
Yeah, absolutely. Done so on Friday with a positive result. And you know, a more established Serie A name, you'd probably argue, than the likes of Benevento, who've had an interesting result of their own this weekend.
Looks like Parma might be one of the teams that join them as well. And you know,
I think a lot of people are rooting for that. You know,
course, especially nostalgia, isn't it?
Yeah, especially the we've talked about a lot of the 90s fascination with Italian football on this show in England. And I think a lot of people associate Parma with all those other top clubs that occupy the five places at the top of the league right
absolutely,
now.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And finally, the seemingly endless beauty parade, beauty pageant to become the next manager of Italy. And of course, it is a fantastic job to have. The latest person, Carlo Ancelotti, I mean, having thrown his kind of hat in for Arsenal and got doesn't seem to have been encouraged, where is he now with Italy?
Well, I think we were talking off air and you made the point that you think it's still club football that would get Carlo Ancelotti excited. And I'd be inclined to agree. You know, the newspapers are saying lots of things in Italy. Corriere dello Sport most recently this week saying that Ancelotti has decided against taking the Italian job. I don't think it's any secret that Mancini wants it and he wants away from Zenit. Claudio Ranieri...
Those are two separate things, though.
Well, that's very true.
He wants away from Zenit, full stop.
Yeah.
And then that would be a bonus.
And then Claudio Ranieri's been linked with it as well. So I don't think it's going to be Ancelotti. I think that the fact that a few high-profile jobs are coming up for grabs means that Ancelotti's going to try and keep himself in the market for a club role, for now anyway. I mean, you know, he's 58. He probably thinks he can take on that Italy job a little bit later.
Steve Singer's just tweeted in. Of course, you can tweet us throughout the evening at TalkSport, at Danny Kelly Words, at Rob T. Daily. Says, do you think there'll be a fire sale at Napoli in the summer?
I don't think so. I mean, that's a good question. I think Insigne's completely committed to the club. I can't see him going. I mean, how many star players are there now? I mean, Hamsik has probably had his moment to have a big move when he was touted with Real Madrid and the Premier League. Dries Mertens is 31.
They've got
I
a load
say,
of players just coming over and coming to that age, haven't
exactly,
they?
Exactly, yeah.
But the left back is hugely rated.
Goulam and then Koulibaly's very highly rated. Maybe one or two can be swayed to move on. But look, Napoli are very stubborn when it comes to selling players. Look at Gonzalo Higuain. They forced Juve into paying an absurdly high buyout for a 20, 29-year-old striker, you know, a couple of years ago and getting him to Juventus. Juve will say it's money well spent, but they will stick their feet into the ground and refuse to sell a lot of those guys, no
Who's
doubt.
Your star of the week in Italy, Rob?
It's Bakary Sagna.
Ah!
And I hinted at this before because he scored a 90th-minute equaliser for Benevento. Benevento already relegated, bottom of the league, but they got a 3-3 draw with Udinese. The brilliantly named Kevin Lasagna scored twice for Udinese. But Bakary Sagna with a diving header in the 90th minute. Not only did he do the initial round of celebrations with his teammates and appear to walk back to the halfway line, he was like, I'm going to milk this. And he went over to the subs and got another round of hugs. So good on him.
Good for Bakary
Sagna. Good result
Sagna.
For Benevento.
And good to hear about Kevin Lasagna. People said he was past it.
Said you're mistaken if you're thinking that I haven't been caught cold before. As you bit into your strawberry leaf.
And that's not the technical breakdown you thought it was, of course, it's the Arctic Monkeys. And this is Crying Lightning. Songs about tears and crying tonight, please, because of that amazing press conference during the week when everybody in the Barcelona team were crying, and so was Andreas Iniesta as he announced his retirement from the club. Text me your request, songs about tears and crying, 81089, and you can tweet me directly at Danny Kelly Words. This is the choice of Rob Daly, who I think the Arctic Monkeys might be his favourite band.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you heard the new record yet? I know it's out any second now.
Only a few select reviewers have heard
it. Oh, it's a great title, hasn't it, and all that. So
yeah,
you're very excited.
It's like Tranquility Inn based hotel or something. Yeah. May 11th, and I'm too excited to explain. I've got my tickets for the O2 at least. So.
These are the Arctic Monkeys. Now, normally we go on to either France or Spain or Germany here, but oh, there's been another goal in the game between Deport and Barcelona. Who's got that?
It's been scored by Lionel Messi, I think, Danny, and it was Luis Suarez, right-hand side of the area, flicked it to the back post, an outrageous chip ball to the back post, and from an incredible angle, he just smashes a volley in. It's actually Barcelona's second goal with 6 minutes to half-time. They can win the league tonight at Deportivo. Of course, Clarence Seedorf might be crying later on as well. But the opening goal for Barcelona coming from Felipe Coutinho. Ousmane Dembele, right-hand side of the box, cuts it back. And Coutinho just sweeps it in with his right foot into the top corner far side. Lovely goal, Coutinho. Lovely goal, Messi. Lovely Barca. And headed for 34 games unbeaten out of 34. Although
maybe
they just
not,
conceded.
Maybe not.
Oh, that's a fine finish. So Deportivo have just pulled one back before half-time. They're looking to spoil the party tonight. And they believe...
Isn't it Arsenal's Lucas Perez on the foot?
It certainly is. Lucas Perez has just cracked one into the bottom corner. And Deportivo have got a massive lifeline. So Deportivo 1, Barcelona 2. Clarence Seedorf clapping. He's loving it. Of course, head coach of Deportivo these days. They're in a lot of
bother. And in the back of Lucas Perez's mind, he's going, maybe the new manager will like me. You know, all's possible.
So is he still Arsenal player?
He is. Lucas he is indeed. Perez.
Yes. Wow.
Right. Okay. So that takes us to our poll tonight. It's a bit cheeky. Sorry about this. Managers everywhere. Who is the best manager currently out of work? Who is the best manager currently out of work? And your choices between Carlo Ancelotti, Thomas Tuchel, Luis Enrique, and Chris Coleman. Recently out of work, and I understand favourite for the Ipswich job. Chris Coleman, Luis Enrique, Thomas Tuchel, Carlo Ancelotti. Is that on TalkSport? Is it the poll up on TalkSport? Yes, it is. I haven't put it out yet. At TalkSport on Twitter, at Danny Kelly Words on Twitter, and at Rob T Daily on Twitter.
Just voting now.
Yeah, who
voting
did you vote
now.
For?
Tuchel.
Wow.
Thomas Tuchel.
Okay, that kind of takes him past some very experienced men there.
Yeah.
Luis Enrique's won the Champions League.
Yeah, he has. Says Carlo Ancelotti, who's way out in front. Maybe I've made a mistake here. Tuchel and Coleman are neck and neck. So,
is that right?
I mean, yeah, 11-12% between them.
Okay, at the moment, Carlo
Your
Ancelotti...
Your call, PSG?
I voted for Carlo Ancelotti, though. I do think he's a bit lackadaisical for the modern game. When you see him on the training pitch and he's kind of waving his hand airily, I think his idea is let the players play. I work at great clubs, they've got great players. Let
that
him
is
play.
What he does, I think. That
I
is
think
what
it's
does.
What he does. Yeah. That goal by Deportivo might put a... Well, they're on the attack again here now, offside, but...
good game.
Yeah, very good game. Fantastic. Let's talk about Turkey. Now, I want to call it the Baklavan League because it is the nuttiest in the world. It's also the best race for a title this year, but I don't know where to start with this. We're doing Turkey this week.
Yeah.
I'll let you explain. But the start of this weekend, four teams, the giants of largely the giants of Turkish football, Galatasaray, Istanbul, Fenerbahce and Besiktas were separated by 3 points in a race for the title.
Yeah.
There's been another round of matches. They're still only separated by four.
I'll do the league stuff before the cup stuff, yeah?
The cup stuff is another whole juicy morsel in itself.
So Galatasaray beat Besiktas in the derby, and one of many Istanbul derbies, by 2-0. Fernando and Gary Rodriguez scoring, Dusan Tadic sent off for Besiktas. So that means that Besiktas are now 4 points behind Galatasaray. Besiktas fourth, Galatasaray top, and that's put them in a very good position in terms of the title race.
Yeah, Fenerbahce won, as you said, 4-1. I mentioned that only because Vincent Janssen got his first goal for a long time, the Spurs player, who's been out for, like, I think 6 months with a toe
injury. It's been
a long
time. Yeah, they were really worried about that injury, weren't they?
Yeah, he's come back there. Yeah. I mean, let's make the point here. I know a lot of the clubs are based in Istanbul. It's a bit like Buenos Aires in Argentina. But currently, these four huge clubs who are battling it out, they're all from the capital. It's a bit like Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea and Manchester United going for the title in this country. See what I did there? It's a bit like that. Prepares for Twitter storm. Turns off.
Is that for tomorrow night?
Turns off phone in preparation. Oh, West Ham. All right, let's throw West Ham in there. Queen's Park Rangers, whoever. So the league title race goes on, and it is fantastic. But there's also a whole lot of business going on. The Turkish Cup final is two-thirds of the way through.
Let me mention Adebayor quickly. He scored for Istanbul Besiktas here, who are second. They won 4-1 at Osmanlıspor. So that's... Adebayor news done.
Good.
So the Turkish Cup, this is properly mad. So Besiktas and Fenerbahce played each other. First leg 2-2 at Besiktas. Second leg's 0-0 at Fenerbahce. 57 minutes in, something is thrown at the Besiktas head coach, Şenol Güneş, and it splits his head open. He has to have his head stapled.
There's a terrible picture of a man with it's every bit of 2.5 inches heading towards 3 inches cut on the top of his head. Held together with five of those brutal metal staples.
Yeah, really ugly looking thing. So game called off. call off. They said, we'll work out what we're going to do later. So 0-0 in the 57th minute. The authorities say, OK, we're going to play the final 33 minutes behind closed doors. Besiktas say, absolutely no way are we turning up for that. That's supposed to be May 3rd, so that's this week sometime. They say, we're not showing up. They've been told, if you don't show up, you're out of the cup, you're not going into the final.
I would add that when the poor man demonstrated his wound, the picture of the savage staples in his head, certain of the Turkish newspapers said that they got quotes from outside sources, no names, just saying, oh, they did that themselves in the dressing room.
Conspiracy theories have been...
I mean, he wasn't that badly hurt, they just cut his head open in the dressing room.
This has got everything. And this is the quote as well that Besiktas put up on their website. We've been on the field for 115 years. We've won, we've had draws, we've lost. In order to not accept being losers, we will not show up. How good is that? So I have no idea what's going to happen. At the moment, I think Fenerbahce are going to turn up at an empty stadium on their own.
Brilliant. So literally, crazy. So I think this goes well, because there's no crowd allowed in. If the opposition don't turn up, so it's Fenerbahce's 11 players, plus their subs, plus the four officials.
And are they going to open the door and let them into the stadium anyway? Like, if the other team's not there, you just get our boys.
Oh, no. I mean, I remember that World Cup where Chile got to score a symbolic goal because the Oppo didn't turn up. Something to do with the war, I think, 1970.
Really?
When there was a war between El Salvador and, forgive me, Honduras, caused by war. Chile. Somebody refused to pay Chile because of their government. And Chile had to turn up and score a symbolic goal. I want to see more of that in football. And fans of this part of the world, in case you thought that the Turkish Cup final being boycotted by our participants wasn't enough, we'll be talking about the Greek Cup final very, very soon. A not dissimilar situation. My favourite thing that happened in Turkey this week, and it's all great, involves the fellow being banned from the ground.
Okay, so Denizlispor, right?
Yeah.
One of their supporters has got a stadium ban at the minute. So what he did was he hired a cherry picker, put flags on the little cage bit and had it crane over the stadium so that he could see the game. And there's great photos of him going, go on, boys, obviously in Turkish. And eventually the police were like, come on down. And they shuffled him away in his cherry picker. But I think not bad imagination.
But the next time you're moaning about having to queue up for 20 minutes to get into a football ground, think about this fella hiring his cherry picker so he can see the team he supports. You might be a little bit soft core. Coming up next here on Trans Europe Express with me, Danny Kelly, and Rob Daly, we'll talk about Germany, where we've seen the first relegation and much else besides, including the new king of red cards, and he's on his way to the Premier League. Songs about tears and crying tonight, please. 8:10:89 and at Danny Kelly Words on Twitter. This is my choice. Smokey Robinson, the miracles, the genius of Smokey Robinson, and Tears of a Clown. The secret of Motown success in the 70s. Just listen to that record. The bass sounds like an earthquake, and the smallest instrument in the band, that tambourine, is mixed like First World War artillery. Your request, please. 8:10:89 at Danny Kelly Words. Let's move on to Germany, Rob. Your beat normally for a man is to keep the wolf from the door, I understand. I understand you keep the wolf a tremendous distance from the door. That's right, isn't
it? That's true. Yeah, I came back from Germany this morning.
Well, you've got a wedding to pay for this year.
Oh, yes.
That's public now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's public.
Fantastic.
It's the second most high-profile ginger wedding of 2018.
In Ireland, it's probably the 44th highest ginger wedding. There you are. Let's talk about Germany then. And our headline, and we just cannot stop punning about Hamburg and hamburgers. And they're still not mincemeat, it says here. Hamburg, who, of course, this is the, remember that? So remember that? So we recorded the sound of about 20 weeks ago when Rob said, this is the year Hamburg are definitely going down. This is the sound of him putting the nails in their coffin. And yet they will not lie down for you.
No, I shouldn't have.
This is the sound of Hamburg inside their coffin. They're knocking to get out.
They're alive. They're alive somehow. They won 3-1 at Wolfsburg this weekend. And they've actually completely pulled Wolfsburg into the fight now to survive. So Wolfsburg are in the relegation playoff spot with 30 points. Hamburg have 28 in 17th, just below them. So 2 points in it. They won 3-1 at Wolfsburg. Bobby Wood, who's completely rubbish, scored a penalty. Lewis Holtby scored again. He's got like 4 goals in 5
Holtby
games.
Holtby for England, etc. Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Making a late run for the World Cup
I love
squad.
That Lewis Holtby, yeah, for a good thing. And Luka Waldschmidt, who scored the goal last season that put Wolfsburg in the relegation playoff spot, effectively did it again. So a lot happened at the weekend for Wolfsburg. And They are in so much trouble.
That was
insane.
At home to Hamburg, that was the game. They only had to draw to really. That was the game they just could not afford to lose.
No, and I think the other teams are like, what are you doing? Why are you keeping them in it? But, you know, with 2 games to go, they are still alive. I mean, I was thinking, you know, we wanted the clock, didn't we? We wanted to buy the clock for the studio, but
For those of you who don't listen every week, I know, ridiculous thought, but some of you might be newcomers. Hamburg have this fantastic digital clock in their stadium, which it shows the seconds, minutes, hours, months, and years since they were relegated.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like 100 years, something extraordinary like that. And what they're going to do with it if they do get relegated? We want it here for the studio clock to replace these, frankly, piddling little things that we have in the studio. Now, to be fair to you, Rob, which is not a phrase you hear very often, this is the sound of even earlier in the season, you would tell him that Cologne would go down, nailing their coffin.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And you were right about
that. Fondly.
You were right about
they
that.
They got relegated this weekend, sadly. Probably my
daily, everyone.
Probably my favourite Bundesliga club. They had to win this weekend at Freiburg, who are also still in with the chance of being relegated. They went 2-0 down. They pulled it back to 2-2. Leonardo Bittencourt with 2 brilliant goals. But then they conceded in added time to lose. So they are down to Bundesliga 2.
But what we saw with their fans coming en masse, and I mean masse, to Highbury and to the Emirates Stadium earlier in the season, said something about what kind of football club this is. And the fact that they're 2 best players, and one of them's got a World Cup winner's medal, unless I'm very much mistaken, have come out and said, actually, we're going to stay and fight it out. Tino Horm, who everyone thought would go, Jonas Hector would be in huge demand, both staying.
They're both staying. They're going to play in Bundesliga 2. And I think back to when Juventus got relegated and the likes of Buffon and Del Piero and Trezeguet, all those guys stayed. A similar thing's happening at Cologne. So Jonas Hector will play at left back at this World Cup for Germany.
Yep.
First choice left back. Captain of Cologne. He says, I'm staying. And they've signed contracts taking 50% pay cuts. Timo Horn, the reports are he's taken a 60% pay cut. So, you know, there was talk of him being the next Borussia Dortmund goalkeeper, heavily linked with Liverpool. So they were both crying last weekend after a home draw with Schalke, where they fought back from 2-0 to get to 2-2. It wasn't enough. So, you know, incredible connection between those two players in particular. I mean, Timo Horn's a Köln boy, used to stand on the stand and watch his team play, now plays for them. But they've probably, I mean, for Jonas Hector, he's probably signed away any big career move now for himself. And
it'll be very, very interesting to watch them next year.
Yeah.
in Bundesliga.
They have to come back up.
Yeah,
by the way,
of course.
Otherwise, they're in a world of pain financially.
Is that right?
Well, yeah. Because the wage bills are very high there. So
meanwhile, in the ongoing, what you could call it, drama that is Bayern Munich, it was the Niko Kovac derby, where the future manager of Bayern takes on the takes on the team that he's currently managing, as so often happens
silly,
in Germany.
Isn't it? I mean, it is annoying. And, Niko Kovac is Frankfurt. They've spiralled. Aside from reaching the cup final, where they will play Bayern.
So this is a rehearsal for the cup final
exactly.
as well.
But Bayern are only thinking about the Real Madrid game. So they completely changed the team, played their youngest 11 since 1971. God bless whoever worked that out. Nicolas Dorsch scored on his debut. Wagner, Zule and Rafinha all scored as well. The only first team players who I think will start in the week, Kimmich and Hummels played. Aside from that, you know, and Sven Ulreich, the goalkeeper, who doesn't need resting. And they beat Frankfurt 4-1.
I should make a point here that it's very important to Bayern Munich, despite that defeat against Real Madrid. We'll talk more about the Champions League later, but this point needs making, doesn't it? This Bayern Munich side are desperate to stop Real Madrid, because Real Madrid, if they were to win it 3 years running, am I right in thinking that would be the first side to win three successive European championships since Bayern Munich in the mid-70s?
Yeah, that's probably right. I don't think anyone with three in a row since that.
No, they haven't. I'm sure the Bayern players have been made aware of this.
And they, you know, you read the quotes from the players, they say, and I think even Thomas Müller was talking about, our season's no longer defined by the Bundesliga. It's defined by the Champions League, and they've come up short again. I don't want to get into this too. I know we're going to talk about this later, but have they signed the quality of player required to compete with Real Madrid? Probably not. But they'll look at what Juve did and think they've got a chance. But, you know, another win in what has been a very comfortable title win for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to the race then behind them for Champions League football. Leipzig imploding. Naby Keita establishing himself as the Koenig, the king of red cards.
His discipline is a real issue. I mean, look, you're 3-0 down at Mainz today, and it's added time. You're already on a yellow card, and you just foul someone completely needlessly. So his fourth red card of the season. One of those were on international duty, but three for Leipzig. He's been very good in recent weeks. He's improved in the second half of the season. He was poor in the first half of the season. His last five games, he's been involved in five goals, either assisting or scoring. But there is a discipline issue there. Now, whether this all stems from, I'm going anyway.
Mm-hmm. Off to Liverpool, of course.
Off to Liverpool, season, yeah. Who knows? And he might well have played his last game for Leipzig. You know, they've got two games to go. He's going to get a one-game ban at least for the red. I made it. He goes to 10 yellows, so maybe he gets another game. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. You know, completely unnecessary, and Leipzig are bottling it, plain and simple.
Dortmund still very, very much in there in the Champions League places. And you think Jadon Sancho should go to the World Cup?
Oh, yes, I did say that in the office. Do I mean it? Yes, I mean it.
Good.
I'll tell you why. Last weekend, he was unbelievable in a very big win against Bayer Leverkusen. Scored one, made two. I know this is the Theo Walcott 2006 World Cup thing, isn't it? I'm doing that with Jadon Sancho, the poor fella. But he is incredibly quick. He's so intelligent. He's so confident. And he's so positive. And I think, even though England might not play with wingers at the World Cup, granted, I think as the option, I would take it. He's not had a great deal of game time, but I'm such a huge fan of him.
And in fourth place, Hoffenheim, blow there for Serge Gnabry, injured, out of the World Cup?
It looked pretty bad to me. I mean, I was commentating the game on Friday night. They beat Hanover 3-1, but he went off with a thigh injury, missed 2 months of the season with a thigh injury earlier. Lars Stindl went off at Gladbach this weekend. That's two players who were hoping to make the World Cup squad. His looked really bad, an ankle ligament injury. I think both might be out, but that, you know, we haven't heard the full prognosis on the pair yet.
And despite Bayern Munich's best efforts to hobble them, Hoffenheim still in the Champions League places. Julian Nagelsmann really does deserve a great deal of credit for what he's doing there. And a couple of things have happened as well. We understand that Fortuna Dusseldorf, another name from the dim and distant past, they've been promoted to the Bundesliga.
Yes, they secured it with a win over Dynamo Dresden. They even survived a late penalty scare, a missed penalty to a late goal, I should say, that they scored that secured their place back in the Bundesliga after a four-year absence. Kaiserslautern, champions only in 1998.
Now, this is is there a background to this? Well, how can Kaiserslautern be into the third level?
I've not been following Bundesliga 2 as closely as perhaps I should have done, but they haven't been nearly required to. I know, I'm really sorry. I'm trying to keep up with the Greek Cup.
But, Mark Langdon would know, that's for
probably,
sure.
He probably would, actually, to be fair.
Get me Langdon!
Stay away, Langdon! Look, 20 years on from the most shocking league title in Europe success, when Kaiserslautern won it in 98, like Leicester winning it here, honestly, that's how big.
Well, we're going to hear about something similar in Holland as well before the end of the show.
Yeah, soon. And so they dropped down to the third tier, and like 1860 Munich, who we've seen fall into similar fates, have actually dropped down a bit further. You know, some of the big names falling out of the top two tiers.
Who is your star of the week in Germany?
Two. I'll do them very quickly. Ando Kramaric scored a hat-trick. Brilliant form at the moment for Hoffenheim. His last goal, a fantastic lob. But I have to give a mention to a young kid called Riddle Baku, right, for Mainz. He was on the reserve team coach off to a Freiburg game. And then as they're on the drive, they go, stop the bus at the next service station. We need to pick up this kid for the first team against Leipzig. They go get him. They start him on his debut. He scores the third goal. They win 3-0. So Riedler Baku probably gets my star of the week.
That is lovely. And thank you for rattling through all the news from Germany there. Let's get the latest from our poll. Who is the best manager currently out of work? Now, I don't know which is most remarkable about this. Nearly 7,000 votes already. And you can vote on Twitter at Rob T Daily, at Talk Sport, or at Danny Kelly Words. And so far, Carlo Ancelotti is winning by a mile, 58% of the vote. Luis Enrique, 19%. Thomas Tuchel, soon to be announced as the PSG manager, I suspect, 12%. But he's only 1% ahead of Chris Coleman, who's got 11% of the vote. I'm loving all that. There's a goal in Paris, Rob Daly.
Paris Saint-Germain 0, Gencamp 1, and it looks like Blas is the player who's got it. It's a wonderful half volley, left foot, edge of the box, pinging off the bar, Yeboah style. They're leading at half-time at the French champions.
Coleman in. Coleman in at PSG. That's what we say on Trans-Europe Express. You were my sun. You were my earth. You didn't know all the ways I loved you. No. So you took a chance. Made of a plan. But I bet you didn't think that come crashing down. No. Onto that tire, crying and tears. This is Justin Timberlake and Cry Me a River. Different from Julie London's version of Cry Me a River, I think it's fair to say. Your request, please, 81089 the text or tweet me at Danny Kelly Words. And the reason we're doing songs about crying and tears is that extraordinary press conference where Andres Iniesta announcing his departure from Barcelona. He wept like a starlet, and all of his teammates at the back of the room joined in as well. There was lacrimose, I think is the word I'd use. And that takes us to Spain this week. And adios, Andres.
He's going. Ending a 22-year association with Barcelona, 4 Champions League, 8 league titles, a winner in a World Cup, 125 caps for Spain. Going to win his 35th career title probably tonight as Barcelona are winning at Deportivo where he's on the bench. He said, I've looked at him this season, having played most games, and think he is still outstandingly good. I mean, ask Chelsea from the last round of the Champions League, from the previous round for that, the round of 16. But he says, the club deserves the best version of me, and in the very near future, I won't be able to be that. It's best for me to leave this
and
club
some,
feeling
some
important.
Some Chinese club deserves the most expensive version of me.
Chongqing Lee fan, that he won't confirm it yet. He's going to get his fat payday, you know, like Xavi's had in Qatar. And I get, you know, the legacy thing, the things are dandied. You just go out while you're on top. I mean, he's not going to headbutt someone in his final game, but, you know, he said in September 1996 that arriving at Barcelona was the worst day of his life. He was just in complete tears as his family left him there. And he's an interesting guy who's talking so much about his feelings and his ups and downs. And he's had massive lows, even though he's had huge success. But, you know, Barcelona losing what many people are saying, maybe the greatest Spanish athlete ever. Is he the greatest Spanish footballer? All these discussions right now about Andres Iniesta.
Okay. I'm thinking about one or two Spanish cyclists from the past. If I may.
Yeah.
But the real drama this week was surrounded Seville, who that fantastic and famous victory over Manchester United in the Champions League is their only victory in three months. And inevitably,
Vincenzo Montella's been sacked again.
Which you've been predicting for...
It just didn't seem right, did it? I just couldn't work out anything why that Vincenzo Montella appointment was made by Sevilla. You know, they sacked Eduardo Barroso during the Champions League campaign. They brought in Montella. Now they did get the win at Manchester United. No win since that in 9. It was their only win in 11. they had just completely fallen apart, beaten by Levante on Friday night, and the club said, we've got to make a change, and the club are making wholesale changes.
I mean, the sporting director, who had the most difficult job in world football following Munchie in there, yeah, he's gone as well.
It's the Fergie of sporting director jobs to try and place. Oscar Arias has gone as well. They've completely gutted that, and they're going to review it in the summer. Former Sevilla boss Joaquin Caparrós, who got the club up in 2001, takes over for the remaining games of the season, because it looks like they probably won't, they might not qualify for Europe as well. So a lot of soul searching is severe at the moment, a club that have been lauded for many aspects of the way that clubs run.
And the other story, I guess, is that Real Madrid won 2-1 against Leganés, but it was really Real Madrid's ghost 11, wasn't it?
No, but it's the reserve, so you play Gareth Bale, you play Karim Benzema and you win. Gareth Bale did score early on. His goal-scoring rate has been absolutely fantastic since.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The turn of the year, Borja Mayoral got what was a controversial equaliser. It was all about Real Madrid resting the star players for the week. The bad news ahead of the Champions League semi-final was that Carvajal and Isco are out of the second leg against Bayern. And Zidane, after the game, you know, asked about Benzema and Bale playing, says they'll stay in the summer. They're not going anywhere. I don't believe that.
Yeah, but those are quite significant blows. Those two injuries you just mentioned.
Massive,
there. Absolutely.
Massive, yeah.
And who is your star of the week in Spain?
It's Mikel San Jose. So in the Basque derby between Sociedad and Athletic Bilbao, he managed to score two own goals in a 3-1 win for Sociedad, formerly of Liverpool, Mikel San Jose. And, a great result for Sociedad, who recently sacked their manager Eusebio Sacristán. And worth noting that in the January transfer window, after City paid all that money for Laporte, they spent a load of money on bringing in Iñigo Martinez from Sociedad to Bilbao. He was in the centre of defence and couldn't stop a defeat against his former club. So all the more sweet for Sociedad.
Let me just give the latest from those games that are being played tonight. PSG 0, Gongamp 1, Deportivo 1, Barcelona 2. Barcelona would be champions if that result holds. And it's still 0-0 in the game between Torino and Lazio at the Stadio Olimpico in Turin. This is Trans-Europe Express with Danny Kelly and Rob Daly. We'll be back very, very soon to talk about Roma and Liverpool and Italy and England.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Danny Kelly's Trans-Europe Express on Talk Sport.
Yeah, Okay, welcome back to the second and final hour of tonight's edition of Trans Europe Express with me, Danny Kelly. Rob Daly, as you've been hearing, my favourite co-host, is also very much in the house. We've got a special guest coming up for you now. We'll talk for the next half an hour about what might happen in Rome in the semi-final of the Champions League second leg between Roma and Liverpool. We'll talk about the history of the fixture, and I'll tell you who's going to do that in just a second here on the programme. Simon Calder will join us for his latest of his travel reports about stadiums and cities you might visit if you choose to go to the Soviet Union for the upcoming World Cup. Every game live here on Talk Sport. We still need to get the latest from France, Portugal, Holland, Switzerland, Greece and Russia. And I want to preview as well before the end of that Thursday's game in the Europa League semi-final, where Arsenal have got a real problem when they go to Madrid to take on Atletico. That game, as well as the two other quarterfinals, the semi-finals in the Champions League, are live here on Talk Sport, and you're listening to Trans Europe Express. Well, there's been another goal in the game between Deportivo La Coruña and Barcelona. If Barcelona win, they're champions of Spain. They were 2-0 up. Rob Daly?
It's 2-2. Lucas Perez got the equaliser.
Arsenal's very own.
I think Emre Colak might have got the goal that's made it 2-2 for Deportivo.
Oh,
Clarence Seedorf is on the touchline, clapping his hands. He's absolutely delighted. He's really struggled with Deportivo since taking charge.
They're going down, let's be honest.
Yeah, a ball into the right-hand channel. They get in behind Samuel Umtiti, and then it's on the right-hand side of the box. They work it into the middle, surely, eventually. Yeah, a low cross, completely unmarked. Oh, it's actually a lovely little layoff to the edge of the six-yard box to tuck in. Lovely goal, great spirit from Deportivo. And, you know, we saw Andres Iniesta warming up a few moments ago. I wonder if he's going to...
Well, perhaps a ceremonial appearance might not be on the cards now, because they need to win this game, Barcelona, to put this thing absolutely to bed. I talked to you, the facts are these, that after an hour at Anfield, Liverpool were in the final of the Champions League. They're still very much a favourite, so to do, but there is a little bit now on the game after that 5-2 victory for Liverpool. To talk about that game and the return in Rome, live here on Talk Sport, and everything that's gone on between these two clubs over a period of 30 or 40 years even, I'd like to say we're joined by Tony Evans, top journalist, top writer. His most recent book is called Two Tribes. And, of course, very much part of the furniture, if you don't mind me saying that, here on TalkSport. Good evening, Tony.
Well, I'm built like a couch.
Very attractive Chesterfield. Yeah, very good indeed. I'm the non-Liverpool fan in this room. Let me just say that I thought Liverpool were magnificent the other night. I mean, it's not an original thought. The dynamism of their football was something to behold. And anybody who's ever said, I like football, could not have helped themselves to say, watch this team swing. In musical terms, they swing at the moment, Liverpool, when they're going forward. And it was amazing to see. And I sometimes think that the praise of Mo Salah is massively overdone. He's fantastic. But Firmino was amazing. I think Mane's a great player. What a performance by their midfielders. Gush, 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 gush. And now I've got to ask you the obvious question. I'll start with you, Rob Daly. When the second of Roma's goals went in, what did you feel?
A little bit sick. I think the reason is not necessarily because I think Roma will do what they did twice, like they did against Barcelona in the last round, but you're in the final, and then you're not in the final, and you've actually had that ripped away, because 5-0, you're in the final, and that was the difference I felt. And also, it was also needless, really. They had the game in complete control to concede those two goals.
Tony, you've watched more games than Rob, I think it's fair to say. Can you give him any comfort here?
Well, not really, because, I mean, Liverpool live on the edge of this emotional chasm, and it doesn't take much to knock them into it. You know, it's the panic sets in pretty quickly. They've got better defensively over the last few months since Christmas, but there's still a bit of uncertainty there. I think it'll be something that's addressed next year and it'll get better. But, yeah, I mean, because being at the Etihad for the previous round, you know, with the 3-0 lead to City, and then they concede in the first minute, and it was just... They were ragged. They were so ragged for the entire first half. But they did hold on. So hopefully that experience will stand them in good stead.
I mean, let's talk a bit about positives. It must have been, I suppose, this is a word that you can't help but just be proud of this Liverpool team when they start playing the way they can.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, the movement, the pace, the front three especially are just stunning. They just tear people apart, and you can see the confusion. The one thing, Roma were terrified of crossing the halfway line, leaving any space behind them, so they didn't play the natural game. I mean, once Salah went off, they got a bit bolder, and then they got forwards. But when you can see the fear on good teams, faces, you think something good's going on here.
I should make the point that Milinkovic-Savic, one of the hottest players in Europe just now, has given Lazio the lead in Turin. It's Torino 0, Lazio 1, a header by the aforementioned Milinkovic-Savic. And Rob Daly, I mean, people go on about the, you know, the young players, Trent Alexander, etc., yeah, and what they did. Where's this youngster Milner come from?
I mean, Jurgen Klopp, I think, has to take so much of the credit for the level of improvement in James Milner. If I think back to the Spurs away game at White Hart Lane when Klopp first came in and they all ran an extra 2 kilometres or whatever it was, something stupid. I think he has, and I think retiring from international football has helped Milner as well. You know, he's a guy who's lived a near, in terms of looking after his body and everything, never drank. He's in perfect condition. I mean, if I'm Gareth Southgate, I'm thinking I'm giving him a call.
But I know that James Milner can run and stuff, but 9 assists in one Champions League season.
I mean, the group stage was a bit of an anomaly, wasn't it? But, I mean,
you still got to pass the ball.
You do. You're true.
See, I've got to disagree a little bit with Rob here because it's, you know, Milner, he shunted him at left-back, played him at left-back for more than a season. Then, in the summer, tried to offer him rounds on loan to everyone. They wouldn't pay his wages. And all of a sudden, he's realised he's a midfielder. Whoa, how do you work that one out, Rockford? It's, you know, he's always been a midfielder and he should have been playing in this position throughout his time there. I think this is one area where Jürgen had tried to be a bit too clever.
We'll talk about the second leg when we've had a little break. But then let's talk to me then about who Liverpool prefer to play in the final, because I guess it isn't Real Madrid.
No, it's Bayern. It's definitely Bayern.
I mean, you see Bayern more than myself and Tony, I guess.
Yeah, I don't. I think they would have their nervy spells, much like Roma have had, much like City have had this season, certainly against the direct pace. They don't face it in the Bundesliga. They don't face anything like what that Liverpool front three does. And, you know, Real Madrid weren't spectacular the other night. They were just relatively efficient. I think Zidane deserves a lot of credit for his tactical prowess. I think something underrated, actually, despite the fact he's won 2 European Cups already. And I think, you know, Liverpool, I think Bayern would be much preferred. And Jurgen Klopp knows that team, those players very well. Granted, he's lost a few cup finals to Bayern, including the 2013 Champions League final. But absolutely preferred. But I think Real Madrid will be in Kiev.
You're a Bundesliga man. When Bayern Munich start, you know, they've ended up with Niko Kovac. And one of the things they said was, we want somebody who knows the league and we want somebody who speaks German. Are they grinding their teeth that somehow Jurgen Klopp is not at Bayern Munich right now?
They'd take him in a second if he was available. I mean, they just know they can't get him.
No, yeah, don't get him from Liverpool. No, I get that. But they could have got him at other times in the past 3 or 4 years.
I think it would have been difficult. When he was at Dortmund, you're not getting him at Bayern. There was no way he was going to make that move. And he, you know.
Well, like Hummels was never going to make that move.
Hummels is ex Bayern. Mario Götze was a kid seduced by the idea of playing for Guardiola, and Lewandowski had no horse in the race. I don't think it's impossible that Klopp ends up as Bayern coach one day. I think that could still happen. But there just wasn't enough of a window for Bayern to get him. And don't get that. If he was around this summer, he would have been. They would have taken him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but what he's doing at Liverpool at the moment, whatever happens in the next 3 or 4 weeks in the Champions League, he may be out of their reach for years and years to come. I know you two probably hope that very, very much. Indeed. Tony, who would you prefer? If let us allow you the fantasy of Liverpool getting to the final, who would you prefer to play?
I think Bayern. I mean, I'll defer to Rob's knowledge on this, yeah, because he sees them much more than me. But, you know, I mean, if it is Real, I've seen us beat them in a European Cup final before, so, you know, I mean.
Which one remind me?
1981. Alan Kennedy in the Parc des Princes.
Of course, yeah. I'm trying to think now. Ball comes across and he's... Well, for a fullback in those days, very far advanced, isn't he? Left foot, yeah, it's coming to my mind now. Yeah, absolutely. How many of Liverpool's 5 triumphs can you actually remember?
Oh, I can remember them all. The only one I didn't go to was 1977 because I was doing a commerce O-level and my mother wouldn't let me go. Instead, she went and took my younger brother.
Is that true?
I have never...
That woman's a traitor.
I have never forgiven her. I hope she's listening now. You're a bad mother.
Yeah, she is. That is poor parenting. Yeah, no, let's have it right, Rob.
No, no,
incidentally,
no,
that was
no.
The, That was your scream laugh. We haven't heard since his name Mara Gitt.
I can't let that. I shouldn't let that one out. That just caught me out.
Now, our producer, of course, who is Mardy, that is the correct word, I think, for him. Partially because he's given up the fag. Good for him. But he's making
cranky today. Oh, I mean, I'm not liking it.
He's like a toddler who's not had his juice, isn't he? Yeah. He says, Madrid have knocked out PSG, Juventus and beat Bayern away. They've also had Dortmund and Spurs in their group. Liverpool had Maribor, CSKA, Porto in the round of 16. They beat no one. Except Manchester City. He's grudgingly allowed Manchester City. But it's cup football. That doesn't matter one iota. It's how you get to the final, mate. You get to the final and you win the thing, don't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing which worries me about Real is they've been there and done it before, and they've got Cristiano Ronaldo, whoever you think about him, is one of the greatest single-game players ever. You know, that's where it rank him, you know, among the highest. And he's got that mental toughness that perhaps Liverpool don't quite have. So that would be a concern. But you know what? Again, the pace of those front three, I think, that caused the Real defence some problems.
Great players though they are, Cruz and Modric. If that Liverpool midfield starts to tick the way it has done in some of these big games, you know, even the best players can be left chasing shadows. It's a fantastic prospect. And next up here on Trans Europe Express, we'll talk about some of the darker things that have gone on. Obviously, there was a fan, injured. It wasn't injured. He was attacked before the game. And Tony knows the background to the history between these two clubs, and it goes back way into the last century. And we'll talk about what might happen. Hopefully, there'll be no problems at all, but why these things tend to happen. I'll give my own experience of watching football in Rome. Beautiful city, fantastic grub. The Vatican's nice to look at as well. So is the Colosseum. Watching football in Rome, not quite the picnic you might think it is. You're listening to Tony Evans, Rob Daly and me, Danny Kelly here. I forgot my own name there. Danny Kelly here on Trans Europe Express.
Oh, the streets of Rome are filled with rubble. Ancient footprints are everywhere. And almost think that you're seeing double on a cold, dark night on the Spanish stairs. Gotta hurry on back.
The more astute among you will have noticed what we did there. Songs about tears. So this is Tears of Rage by Bob Dylan and the band. And it starts with that line, the streets of Rome are paved with rubble. And it's about rubble and trouble and Rome that we're going to be talking for the next 15 minutes with Tony Evans. We've got musical requests, songs about tears and crying, 81089, and tweet me at Danny Kelly Words. Of course, this is not Tears of Rage, you want to paint my masterpiece, Danny. You've had a brain freeze there. Now listen, The Breakfast Show comes live from Rome this weekend on Wednesday and Thursday morning. It's Alan Brazil and Dean Saunders from 6 both days. Remember, both the Champions League semi-finals and the Europa League semi-final between Atletico and Arsenal, all live here on Talk Sport. Tony Evans, obviously there was an incident before the game on Merseyside. We saw a man stabbed, so there's been two arrests, there'll be charges and all the rest of it. And it is easy to put that down as one of those things that happens when lots of people gather for a big emotional event like a football match. Of course, it shouldn't happen. But there's more to this, and the return in Rome, first let me say that I absolutely hope it goes off without hitch, without incident, and it's just a great football match. But there is a shadow hanging over this, isn't there?
Well, there's a few. I mean, the relationship with Liverpool and Roma goes back to 1984 when we played the European Cup final in Rome. So essentially, they played it at home, and the whole city was just bedecked with European cups, and they thought it was a coronation rather than a match. They thought they were going to win, and from the moment we arrived there, it was hostile. I mean, they took us around the Rome Ring Road and in coaches, and there was like those Fiat, you know, with the soft tops that come back, and they come up alongside, someone to pop out, throw a bottle or a brick, fire a flare, and we were under attack all day, loads of stabbings and slashings in the city, and then when we won on penalties.
Bruce Grobler's famous spaghetti legs,
exactly.
All of that, yeah.
It seemed like the place erupted. As we were coming out, you have to come out and walk uphill at the Cave of Nord to get to the main road. And they'd all go on the top of there and they'd fill the big bins, you know, big metal bins. They were full of rubbish. They'd set them on fire, roll them down the hill at us. And then they charged lots of people. My mate's dad nearly died. He was stabbed in the liver and the lungs. And there was scores of people got stabbed. It was Roman's frenzy that night. It was just insane.
I should make the point that I don't know whether it's still the same now, but the laws in Italy, and this is why this stabbing thing is so disturbing, the laws in Italy, maybe it's only in Rome, certainly in the past, they said that if you stab someone below the waist, then it's not attempted murder. You just get done for common assault. So that's why there's all this tremendous tradition, if that's the right word, and it's not the right word, of stabbing people in the buttocks, in the ass, the legs.
They actually have a name for it. It's called puncture curtae, and they consider it to be a Roman tradition. And it's, the chief of police in 2008 said, oh, you know, it's just getting the first blow in. And they claim that it's come from medieval sword fighting, and we get your opponents. Well, you know, you've both got swords then. They've elevated stabbing people in the backside into a cultural symbol. Rome is the only place where visiting football fans are routinely targeted and routinely stabbed.
Okay, and I can add to this one personal, Rob, if I'm from personal knowledge. In 1997, I was working for Channel 4, and I went to the famous 0-0 draw in Rome between England and Italy that qualified Den Hoddle's England team, Ince and the blood and all the rest of it, in right hitting the post in the last minute. Fantastic performance by England. Who remembers that? A fantastic defensive performance by an England team. Now, I grew up in the 70s, right? So I have seen football violence. I have never been in a more violent football ground in my life. Rob, just tell us very quickly what's happened there.
Barcelona have scored again. Andres Iniesta not on the pitch, but it means if it stays like this, Deportivo will be relegated. But more importantly, Barcelona will be champions. And unsurprisingly, it's Lionel Messi who's got his second goal of the night to make it 3-2. They're still unbeaten in La Liga. And Messi's got it hugging Luis Suarez right now. They're on for another league title.
Now, I've got to make my point that, of course, at that time, England's fans had a terrible reputation everywhere they went. And towns and cities everywhere set up for this stuff. But Italy, you know, Rome is a capital city. It has plenty of policemen and all the rest of it. And when I got to the Stadio Olimpico, it was a seething cauldron of violence. And in my eyesight, and this is only my eyewitness account of it, it wasn't necessarily started by Italian fans, people from Rome, or even English fans. I think the first and foremost instigators were the Roman police. They were stood in that paramilitary gear they wear with those big batons, tapping the sides of their knee-high boots. It wasn't hard to remember this used to be a fascist state. Let's be honest. I'm not having a go at Italy. I love the country, but I can only tell you what I saw with my own eyes. They waded into the England fans again and again and again. England fans in those days not taking that kind of thing. They then fought back. Italian fans then got involved. And on three sides of the stadium, it was just almost... there was no football going on in the stadium. It was just this rowing. Jim Smith, the former Derby Queen's Park Rangers manager, was there in the ground about four rows in front of me with his wife. And I remember after half an hour, he got up and he turned back to speak to no one generally and just said, "You can't stay in this. I can't stay in this. Like, my family can't stay in this." And Jim disappeared. I mean, Jim was a pretty tough cookie. You know, he used to deal with Fergie. Let's be honest about this. So there is something desperate about this. But it's 35 years ago. Surely the memories have died away.
I know, but these things are cultural, aren't they? It doesn't... I suppose it's probably not the same people who were there in the 80s attacking
you
guys.
But you were speaking to Gary Gillespie, the ex-Liverpool player, about this.
He says he knew at the time, and he was on the bench for that final interview in this week, and he is well aware of the hurt at the time that caused to Roma, and in the preceding years, and even still now ahead of this semi-final.
Well, I think one of the things that tells you about it is the captain of Roma that night was De Bartolome, and he was like the symbol of the Curva Sud, the ultras. He'd come through the youth system. He was a local boy. He was supposed to be a case, carried a gun in his man bag. They had man bags in Italy in those days before we had them.
Yep.
And but on the 10th anniversary of the cup final, he shot himself in the chest. Now, he had depression issues. He had money problems.
Sure.
But he's got 365 days to choose from. You shoot yourself on the 10th anniversary. I think that said how deeply burned it is into the Roma psyche. It was the biggest day in their history.
Although that's an individual mental health issue. Let's be honest, Tony. You know, you don't do that unless you're off the end of the scale somewhere, do you?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, stared into this cocktail.
Yes, it is. Oh, it's absolutely an ingredient now. It is.
To highlight the lengths to which Roma, that 1984 triumph, how much they wanted that and how much they saw it as fate or something along those lines. They you know, it's transpired since that they did bribe the referee. They got money to the referee in the semi-finals for the Dundee United tie, which, you know, obviously the Dundee United players, having heard this confirmed, having suspected this kind of thing before, feel aggrieved that they don't have at least a runners-up medal to their name.
That takes so 2 goals in 3 minutes for Lionel Messi means it's now Deportivo La Coruña 2. They're going down. Barcelona 4. They're going to be the champions of Spain in about 6 minutes' time. And I wonder if the next board you're going to see is going to bring Andres Iniesta onto the pitch. I imagine that it will. Look, we're being very, very gloomy about this. The world has changed. We're all friends now, apparently. Jurgen Klopp has come out and said that he hopes that the Liverpool fans will behave themselves. I mean, that's a given. What have you thought about it over the years and over the recent days, Tony?
Well, I mean, my view is that if you're in Rome, keep your head down. Don't walk around with Liverpool shirts on. Walk around in reasonably large groups. Don't draw attention to yourself. Don't cause trouble. And make sure you get a cab up to the ground. I think just try and be safe, because I suspect Liverpool fans will be targeted.
Would you? I saw the club saying today that everyone should submit their details and arrangements to pass on the authorities. Do you think that all fans who are going, because I think they're saying like 5,000 are going, should do that anyway?
Well, yeah, I think they should. What's interesting is the press are doing exactly what they did in 1984, the Italian press. In 1984, they said the barbarians were coming, and we've seen similar headlines. There was a report out saying that they said there were 5,000 Liverpool coming, and 1,000 of them might be troublemakers. Really? The way the fan base is now? I'd be lucky if they had half a dozen troublemakers. Well, unlucky if they had half a dozen.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, don't believe me, I'm not making a point here. I'm just saying that's part of the trouble, isn't it, with the way football's covered now. Half a dozen people throwing things at the Manchester City coach is now represented as Liverpool fans. It's not Liverpool fans, it's some morons. But what the danger in Rome, because of this knife culture we talked about, is that the morons might kill somebody.
Yeah.
I really pray to God that no such thing happens, but I'm glad that you came in and told us what's the background to all of this, because otherwise it might just seem to people of a younger generation, including Rob Daly, just bizarre with what's the kind of tension that's been in the build-up when the Liverpool manager, taking 4 days away from the event, is talking about the behaviour of supporters.
Extraordinary.
Tony, it's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you very, very much for coming in and joining us. And thank you very much for telling us about that. That game is live here on TalkSport. Let me give you the rundown. Tuesday, live, Real Madrid against Bayern Munich. Wednesday, that game, live, Roma against Liverpool. That should see Liverpool, hopefully for you two, into the final of the Champions League. And on Thursday, Atletico Madrid against Arsenal is always live. Iniesta has been clapped on by the entire stadium there at Deport as he makes his one of his last appearances for Barcelona. They're 4-2 up and about to win the title in Spain. And unimportant but still worthy of note is that Paris Saint-Germain are now 2-0 down at home to Guingamp, and whoever's going to replace Unai Emery, who announced his departure this week, they can't really arrive quickly enough for Paris. You're listening to the Trans-Europe Express with Rob Daly and me, Danny Kelly. Once again, thanks to Tony Evans. For the last few seconds in Deportivo, Barcelona about to be Spanish champions. Andres Iniesta has the ball at his feet, and it was his tears and those of his teammates during his press conference this week that made us make Tears and Crying our musical theme for the evening. This, of course, is ABC, and Tears Are Not Enough. Brought forward a lovely memory for me many, many years ago in this very studio. I used to do a Friday evening show, and I used to invite in, it's what, 10 o'clock at night, old bands to come and do a few numbers. And Martin Fry and friends came in and did this song acoustically in this very studio. Poor old French League, because of the goings on in Turkey, crying kids in the crowd at Deportivo, not crying at Iniesta. I think they're crying at their relegation. Barcelona winners by 4-2. They're champions of Spain. Deportivo are down. Edinson Cavani has pulled one back up to 75 minutes for Paris Saint-Germain. It's Paris Saint-Germain 1, Guingamp 2. It's still Lazio winning in Turin into added on time there by a goal 2-0. We had to miss out on France because of all the goings on in Turkey. And I suppose we should start with the big news there is always surrounding Paris Saint-Germain and the confirmation of the departure, Rob Daly, of Unai Emery.
Yeah, he said this week that his stay in Paris is over. And it was inevitable. We all knew that he was going to leave because of what happened in the Champions League. That's how, he wants to be remembered fondly, but the legacy will be, despite the fact he might win, a host of trophies this season. They've already won the league, the French Cup final to come. That the collapse of Barcelona, the no-show in the second leg against Real Madrid, this is what defines Paris Saint-Germain now. It's Champions League stage, and it's no surprise he's been linked with a return to Spain and to Sociedad, a club where he was a player and he sported as a boy, maybe to take over as head coach in the summer. So the Emery era, unsurprisingly, coming to an end.
Because it'll be remembered for the fact that the club went out and spent a world record fee, an absolute king's ransom, on Neymar. I can't help feeling that this was one of the most more destabilising than good for the club. I have to say,
He did still score 20 goals, 19 goals in 20 league games or something like that. And but he's not been back to France since he's had surgery. He's been staying in Brazil, just trying to. His focus is on the World Cup. And an ultra group actually came out and released a statement saying that, they found it disrespectful that he hasn't been back to France, that he hasn't been watching his team play week in, week out like most injured players do.
Well, it's leading to a wider question now that everybody has on their lips in France. Is Neymar a git?
Oh, I forgot you were going to do that.
Rob Daly's laugh, which now infamous internet meme and all the rest of it. But it is a bit odd. I mean, unless he's getting the greatest treatment the world's ever known in Brazil, it's a bit odd that he stayed there.
He can almost do what he wants, really.
Yeah.
And Paris Saint-Germain, what are they going to do? Oh, we'll sell you.
Well, you know what kind of manager Thomas Tuchel is. He's not going to stand for this sort of nonsense.
Yeah, well, this is going to be fascinating. If Thomas Tuchel's the guy, as it's widely reported. Yeah, part of the issue with the Paris Saint-Germain's market of managers they're going for, they can't get the top guys like your Guardiola, Mourinho. They've tried and tried and it's not happened. They have to go for the bracket below and hope that they get the guy who breaks them into that group that's won the Champions League. They've tried it with Blanc, they've tried it with Emery. They had Ancelotti, but he left, of course, for Real Madrid at the time. So they're having a punt on Thomas Tuchel, who doesn't actually have much silverware to his name. Won a DFB Cup with Dortmund. We'll wait and see.
But you're absolutely right. Them?
Talk of him taking some sort of sporting director-ish kind of role. They'd call it a manager, really, in France. But I firmly believe, Wenger said he'll take a month at the end of the season to work out what he wants to do. I think he still wants to coach. I don't think when his whole thing is about the art of football and being involved in that, does he really want to watch someone else's art and try and chip in? I don't think so.
Just behind Paris Saint-Germain, who are still losing, by the way, Lyon have now climbed above Monaco with a 2-1 victory over Nantes. And Claudio Ranieri, ever eccentric, I suppose it's fair to say.
Yeah, so he missed the club's 75th anniversary because he had to go fix a leak at his apartment in London. And then he popped up at a load of games in England, which led to people saying that he was, potentially touting himself out for a job in England. The same happened when he went to Italy. Everyone was saying he's trying to get the Italy job. He said there was just a problem with the plumbing. So good old Claudio. I hope he got it sorted.
Yeah.
And if he's, if he wants to rent it out, he wouldn't have this problem. I'm sure it's a nice place if he wants to do a little mates rate for me.
Okay.
I'm in.
Good. Portugal. Suddenly, boom, three-way race for the title.
Well, the main result this weekend, really, is that Benfica lost at home to Tondela by 3-2, a complete shock. And it has completely blown things open for me. I mean, say Benfica had won that, they'd be in a a fantastic position to contest with Porto. But Porto have won. Maritimo, a place where they've had troubles down the years. They haven't had many favourable results there. So it looks like Benfica's stronghold on the Portuguese title is coming to an end with that result. Sporting, can still mathematically challenge. But it looks like, after this weekend's results, it is going to be Porto's year.
I should say the final whistle has gone in Turin. Lazio have won by 1-0. Very, very close now to Champions League qualification for Lazio, putting terrible pressure indeed on Inter Milan further down. I should say that Paris Saint-Germain have equalised a second goal for the incredibly productive Edinson Cavani. PSG 2, Gongam 2 in that game. And it's finished, as we told you, in Deportivo 2 and relegated Barcelona 4 and champions. Holland, there was a derby in Feyenoord. In Rotterdam, Feyenoord won 3-1 against Sparta. But the big story is the relegation of FC Twente.
Yeah, relegated, 8 years on from the famous success under Steve McClaren, where they shot Dutch football to win the leagues, pipping the likes of Ajax and PSV and Feyenoord at the time to the title. They were spared relegation a couple of years ago due to an issue over financial irregularities that were cleared up, but it had been coming for a long time. And, you think back, Twente, they were in the same Champions League group as Tottenham, I want to say, after they won the league title. An extraordinary story, and not the first team that have won a league title in recent times to drop down to a second tier.
Yep. And I think just as big a shock, but it's been more on the cards for several weeks now, is that Basel, perennial champions of Switzerland, are no more Switzerland champions.
Young Boys Bern are the champions. They were last champions back in 1986.
Wow.
Runners-up 8 times since then, including the last 3 years to Basel, who've had a complete monopoly over the Swiss Super League. A 2-1 win over Lausanne secured the title. Lausanne even missed an 89th-minute penalty. And there was a brilliant pitch invasion at the end. So Young Boys are the champions of Switzerland. So while we've had the major leagues, it's normally the same teams winning. And again, a bit of a mix-up in the tier below, if you like.
I step back as I ask you this question. What's the latest from Greece?
Oh, okay. Let's start with the champions. AEK Athens were confirmed champions this week. It's after PAOK lost an appeal over a points deduction, which came, and me and you were on air at the time when the president of PAOK came on the pitch with a gun in a holster in his on his side.
How could they appeal that? How do they, the temerity, the gall, the brass balls to appeal? He had a gun.
Well, they got a fine as well for all of this. So look, done and dusted. AEK Athens, it's been a league dominated by Olympiacos as well, so that's mixing up. That's not the only thing in Greece. Yep. Panathinaikos banned from Europe for 3 years. Because they haven't paid back their debts. UEFA gave them the time. But they said until March, you have to set your debts by March. They didn't do it. So a 3-year ban from European competition. They were in the Europa League qualifiers this year. €100,000 fine as well. And of course, played Liverpool in the 1985 European Cup as well.
Thank you very much indeed. Is there anything to be said much about about Belgium in their ever-rotating leagues?
Well, Club Brugge are running away with the title, plain and simple. And, they have probably been the strongest of the Portuguese sides in recent years. And that just looks like it's going to happen. We've got that divided up league by this stage now. So.
And Russia?
Zenit 0, CSKA 0 today. Igor Akinfeev playing a blinder, the Russian number one goalkeeper for the Moscow side. But it looks like Lokomotiv, who play tomorrow against Krasnodar, are going to win the title after having not won it for a very long time.
Okay, listen, thank you very, very much indeed. That's a very quick spin.
That was rapid fire, wasn't it?
All the other leagues. Let me just tell you, you've still got about 10 minutes to vote in our poll. Who is currently the best manager out of work? 58% and leading by a mile at the moment, Carlo Ancelotti. Watching him from a huge distance away, Luis Enrique with 18%. And now level, neck and neck, Thomas Tuchel, the aforementioned Thomas Tuchel, and Chris Coleman. Both with 12% of the vote. Now, you've got about 10 minutes to vote in that. 3 places you can do that on Twitter. At TalkSport, at Rob T. Daily, and at Danny Kelly Words. Let's see if we can get Chris Coleman ahead of Thomas Tuchel. I've cheated this week. I've had 2 choices. I couldn't do a song about a week about tears and crying without this. From the golden age when American kids just bought guitars and stand in garages, turn them up to 11. This is Question Mark and the Mysterians and 96 Tears. Watch out now. I'm gonna get there. Covered just towards the dawn of punk rock by Eddie and the Hot Rods here in this country, but this is the original and best version. Way down here, and you'll start crying. How many? 96 tears. Very specific. 96 tears are going to fall. Cry. Thank you for all your musical homework tonight. It's been really good of you. And when the sun comes up, Rob, we talked so much about the Champions League in this hour. I think there's a small matter of the Europa League still to talk about. Marseille are 2-0 up from the first leg against Salzburg. Might have a word about them a little later. But I think you were working when the Arsenal game against Atletico Madrid was going on. You saw on Twitter the storm of complaints about Arsenal, and you thought they got beat 3-0.
Yeah, I just went on Twitter, and it was like a complete catastrophe. And the score was 1-1. I thought, you don't want to, you know, if anyone's going to beat you 1-0 at home, it's Atletico. But not a bad result. But then I saw the highlights back.
Yeah.
And I think I understand.
Because it was such an... I don't want to say this because, you know, every game is different. But it was a repetition of what Arsenal fans have got fed up of seeing over the years. Very good performance by Arsenal in many, many ways, albeit against a depleted Atletico Madrid down to 10 men quite early in the game. Yeah. And, of course, with Diego Simeone doing his mad war dance up in the stand rather than at the side of the pitch. And then unravelled by a piece of poor defending. There's no other way of describing it.
No, you can't really understand what happens there with Laurent Koscielny, especially against a player that he knows every single attribute of in Antoine Griezmann.
He knows he's got to, A, stay on his feet, and B, take him right. Now, Griezmann is good enough to beat you, come back inside and slap it in his left foot. But he does neither of those things. He decides to just directly race him and then throw himself to the ground.
Yeah,
I feel sorry for Laurent Koscielny. I think he's been a fantastic player for Arsenal over the past half a dozen years. And whatever that last injury was, something he's not quite... Maybe it will change in the World Cup, but he's not quite the player he was before he had his last serious injury.
And, you know, the top level forwards he's going to be battling against. He's had his ding-dongs with, you know, Diego Costa over the years as well. I loved that, by the way, that clip that was doing the rounds on Twitter when there was a sense of like some beef on the pitch and he shot up like a dog.
It's the Danny Dyer of football, isn't it? It's kicking off there. I'm going to have a go at that. Says Diego Costa goes, oh, it's all kicking off now. I'll have a go at that.
Do you think they can get something there? Do you think they can
absolutely
score there?
Arsenal's teams over the years, away from home in Europe, and I mean, of course, they've had better teams than the one they've got now. They get involved in a footballing match with people, and we've seen them get the goal, and then I'd say Old Trafford, their reserves defended perfectly adequately. You know, it's just when they get to these mad places. Now, look, if you ask me what's going to happen, you know, you can say I suspect that Atletico Madrid will get a goal in the first half and then quietly play the game out. If you ask me what could happen, of course Arsenal can score. I mean, then look, what does everybody know about this Arsenal team? It is more likely to get a goal because of their forward players, and it is to defend their goal properly because of the way the team acts defensively. So they've got to believe it themselves, and I think they can. It's, of course, a desperate task. If they'd won 1-0, if Koscielny hadn't fell over and all the rest of it, and Mustafi also fell over in the same movement, then you've got a better... You know, the story is much more difficult for Atletico, because Atletico, let's be honest, we revere them because they keep getting Champions League finals and the rest of it. They don't get lots of goals. They don't get lots of goals. So if Arsenal score, suddenly Atletico are looking for two goals.
Leicester made things uncomfortable for them, if I think back, especially to the second leg of their Champions League tie against Atletico last season. Atletico were very, very fortunate, actually, not to get themselves into real trouble when the two sides met in England.
You're the expert. Do you think Arsenal will get anything?
No, I don't think they'll go through to the final. I think. You know, the ultimate 1-0 at home side, ironically, against Arsenal, is Atletico. I mean, they've done it time and time again. The giants have fallen to them domestically and in the Champions League in recent years. They've reached two finals. I think they're just going to be too shrewd. And look, to give Arsenal fans a bit more context, they've wrapped up a top four spot. And the weekend, they completely, you know, almost completely rested the first team as they managed to get a 1-0 win away at Alaves. Fernando Torres missed a penalty, the eventual winner coming from Kevin Gamero off the bench. Finished the game with 10 men. But, you know, they didn't even play Jan Oblak. They played Axel Werner, Argentine goalkeeper. The likes of Godin didn't play.
I'm not surprised the shift he put Inter in the week.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, the entire... And Griezmann, I don't think he even had to... He wasn't even on the bench in the end, so... They're going to be 100% champ for Arsenal. Arsenal will be, you know, in good shape because they didn't really play. And Mkhitaryan, of course, but...
It's finished in Paris 2-2 against between PSG and Gongang. Gongang, two up there. Cavani got two late goals to put the Parisians level. But that's the game on Thursday. That's live here on TalkSport, of course. Atletico Madrid against Arsenal. And that takes us to who they might play in the final. Marseille 2 up from that first leg against Red Bull Salzburg. Payet 2 assists, and a very Premier League effort it was. Payet got the two, Dimitri Payet got the two assists, and Clinton and G, and of course Tovin, got the goals.
Yeah, and Tovin scored this weekend in a 1-1 draw at Angers as well, but there was a few changes to the side that she started with Clinton and G, rested Dimitri Payet completely. I think Marseille will see that through. I've been really impressed with Salzburg this season. Let's not forget, this is a team that beat Borussia Dortmund away from home, but no away goal at Marseille. Pelle made some great saves and goal for Marseille on the night. I just can't see them do it. And, you know, Dimitri Payet, as producer Pat pointed out as well, the point that a World Cup's on the horizon. If he wants to make the squad, he has to start playing. I don't think he will.
Deschamps is so spoiled for choices, isn't he?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's been more every week.
But Payet's been outstanding. Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much indeed for that. Thank you so much for the last 2 hours. And thank you all for listening. Just several reminders for you. Tuesday, Real Madrid against Bayern Munich, Champions League semi-final, second leg, live here on TalkSport. Wednesday, Rome against Liverpool, exactly the same, semi-final, second leg, Champions League, live here on TalkSport. And Thursday, Atletico Madrid against Arsenal, live here on TalkSport in the semi-final of the Europa League. And don't forget, the Sports Breakfast also comes to you live on Wednesday and Thursday from Rome at Alan Brazil. And I think Dean Saunders are out there together. So that's going on as well. Tomorrow night, I'll be back at 7 o'clock for kickoff, a reunion of the normal team of Simon Jordan, Gordon Strachan and myself. And in our poll, Ancelotti, these are managers who are out of work. Who's the best? Ancelotti, 58%. Luis Enrique, 18%. But Tuchel and Coleman, level on 12%. Have PSG made the wrong call? God bless you all and good night.
Ancelotti. Your call, PSG.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM. Danny Kelly's Trans-Europe Express on Talk Sport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.